You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Bob.
Says pick Nikki, which rhymes with hi, Mickey. And folks, we didn't even plan this. That's just the kind of magic that happens when we talk.
Bob, I've seen, I went and saw Nikki Haley speak. And frankly, Bob, I was inspired.
In what sense, you know, Nikki?
She wants to end the chaos that's currently in division that's currently in the country and unite the country and return to the sort of normalcy where we can talk about things like the Social Security retirement age and budget deficits and the balanced budget amendment and term limits. Mm-hmm. She's going to put curriculums online, Bob, so parents can see
Excellent.
What their children are learning. And these are the sort of important issues that she's dealing with. She's going to end income inequality by repealing the gas tax. It's sort of innovative. And frankly,
Nikki,
she seemed genuine and inspired. And
so you're on Team Nikki.
I'm a convert.
Mickey's on Team Nikki. That'll probably push her over the edge. Now, before we elaborate on that, you kind of buried your lead. I mean, it was kind of implicit in what you said, but the lead is...
You mean the fact that I am in Iowa?
Mickey's in Iowa. I mean, plus he's on the podcast. That's news, since he hasn't exactly been a regular fixture here. But so you're on the podcast, you're in Iowa. Both these things are news. And
you're a roving reporter, you're a man on the streets.
Right. You're out there taking the pulse of middle America and like you sidle up to people and say, hi, I'm Mickey Kaus from Beverly Hills. And they immediately bond with you. Right?
I did that three times.
With the Beverly positive. Hills part? You said I'm from Beverly Hills?
No, not with the Beverly Hills part. I say I'm Mickey Kaus. And then I sort of figure out what the fuck am I going to say next? I can't say I'm Mickey Kaus with Slate Magazine. I could say I'm Mickey Kaus. I have a newsletter. and that doesn't impress them, but they're pretty used. The people that go to these events are not hostile, really. So I talked to two people, Bob.
Did they ever look at you and say, didn't you used to be big in podcasts? And you say, I am big. It's the podcasts that have gotten little. Does that ever happen in Iowa?
No, somebody did say, wait, don't I know your name from somewhere? And
it turned out it was Mickey Mouse.
It turned out it was a journalist and professor from Grinnell College.
His name is Mickey Kaus. Oh, come on. There's no other Mickey Kaus in the world.
No.
Is there?
No. She.
Oh, she was a.
She claimed to.
Well, how did that go? How did that conversation go? Did you bond with her? Are you seeing her later?
She was very nice, but she had to be neutral. So she wasn't much use in terms of why I'm at a Nikki Haley rally.
Uh-huh. But at least she was somebody, you know, who could converse with you on the level to which you're accustomed, right? She was no mere middle American. I mean, she was an elite middle American.
She'd written a book about the Iowa caucuses. She conversed on a much higher level than I'm accustomed.
Wait, you ran into her randomly or you sought her out? Come on. You just happened to bump into somebody?
She was sitting next to me. And she had students. So I talked to some of the students who were voters. So I talked to one of them. I'm very bad at that. Dan Balls was there. He was interviewing everybody in the room. Wow. He's taken the pulse of the American people.
How old is Dan Balls now?
He looked pretty old.
Mm-hmm. That's you talking. Right?
I can't denigrate people who look pretty old.
No, neither of us can.
I was also at the debates, Bob.
And how did they go? Was last night.
If you look closely, I was in the front row of the debates.
Did you get some TV time?
Apparently, I got a nanosecond of TV time, but I think it was from the rear, focusing on my balding pate. I didn't have the... Somebody claimed to have recognized me.
it's inimitable, that balding pate.
And I ran into Byron York, and he said, you have the Ayatollah look. I thought I had the Chip Roy look, but I apparently have the Ayatollah look. Anyway,
you and Byron are probably he's like a Trumpist conservative, right? You two are probably pretty close.
No, he's not a Trumpist.
He's pretty damn close.
He's a very sensible, smart man.
Ooh, you but just insulted all the world's Trumpists. Do you realize what you just said to all the world's Trumpists? You said, no, he's not a Trumpist. He's sensible and smart.
There go your three remaining
friends, Mickey.
I think he recognizes Trump's failings, but does not think that they're as dire a threat to American democracy as other people think. So anyway, the debate started with Nikki Haley. The DeSantis strategy is, if he still beats her in Iowa, then she will lose in New Hampshire, where she's getting pretty close to Trump, and meet her doom in South Carolina, leaving DeSantis alone on the field. That's the only plausible strategy if DeSantis just toughs it out and says, I beat her in Iowa. This poll shows her beating him in Iowa, however, which would be bad for him. And perversely, according to my friend Ryan Jarduski, bad for Nikki Haley, because if Christie's out of the race now, he dropped out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
His votes will only go to Haley, putting her closer to Trump, perhaps even with Trump. But DeSantis' votes will go to Trump. So if DeSantis drops out, it's a boost for Trump. So Haley does not want DeSantis to drop out. But if she beats him, he might well drop out.
She wants to come in third, not second in Iowa, according to this analysis.
She wants to come in second in Iowa and somehow for DeSantis to stay in the race, I guess. But that's not in her control, really. Maybe she can offer him something like, hey, if I beat Trump, you can be my vice president. But I don't think that's that much of a wonderful offer for DeSantis, especially since I think he despises her at this point. With some justification. Anyway, the gist of the debate is Haley is a state-of-the-art sort of sensible, respectable reformist candidate from around the 1990s. Okay, she's talking about Social Security, and she even mentioned means testing, which is dear to my heart. She has a bunch of little gimmicky do-good solutions like this curriculum thing. And we're ignoring foreign policy here, but we'll get to foreign policy. And she's sort of, we need a new generation, blah, blah, blah. There's a little Gary Hart type vibe about her followers who seem to think she's going to unite is a genuine character who's going to unite America. And, as I felt in New Hampshire when talking to Gary Hart followers right before he won New Hampshire spectacularly. You people are so naive. Just wait. You're going to hate her. Okay. So Gary Hart is a wonderfully appealing candidate on paper, but he's fatally flawed in person. Although in retrospect, he's a lot better than that. She appeals to people who want to go back to the pre-Trump era before it was obvious that free trade was eviscerating the American working class, and before the problems of a globalist foreign policy were completely obvious. The problem is that's not the world we live in anymore. But if you can have sort of the fantasy that if you elect Nikki Haley, we're going to go back to that world, but we're not. She's also clearly fatally weak on the border. She gave speeches, a couple of speeches where she said, we don't want these numerical limits. We want employers to hire anybody who they decide they need. Okay. And she never mentioned that there's any limit on that. It's just, we can't have these quotas. We should have it by skills. And somehow the employers are going to set the limit, I guess. She left that very vague. But at the debate, she said we have to deport them all for speaking to current existing illegals. The way to make those two things make sense is she wants to kick out all the illegals and replace them all with legals. Okay, so they'll be just as many.
Is the political logic here that most of the voters who care deeply about immigration are perma bonded to Trump, so there's kind of no point in trying to pry them away, and she might as well go for the donors who want to, boost the number of workers in America or something? I mean, well, because the obvious thing would seem to be not to do what you just said she did.
The simple explanation is it's what she really thinks. And it's also what voters think.
That's the explanation of last resort in politics.
If she wanted to not priority the Trump voters, why would she say we have to deport them all? Previously, she said, well, people have been here for a long time. We're obviously not going to deport. We have to distinguish them and the newcomers. Mm-hmm. But last night she said deport them all. So she's obviously making a play for Trump voters. Why would she then not bother to say, we need a limit on immigrants, probably because her biggest backer is the Koch brothers. And the Koch brothers want an employer-based system without limits on immigration. And she's already pissed off.
Kind of what I said.
She's already pissed off the Koch brothers. The donors part is real, but she's already pissed off the Koch brothers so much with her warmongering foreign policy that she can't afford to also piss them off on domestic policy. I mean, half the Koch, all these people left the Koch organization because they were offended when Koch backed Nikki Haley.
Right, as you would expect.
With the foreign policy.
Plus, didn't one of the Koch brothers die, and didn't that leave the one who emphasizes the foreign policy more, or not?
That's what my readers tell me. His whole organization is built up of people who agreed with him before he died. So, it's not just him; it's a whole network of money givers. Mm. Presumably, they still believe in a market driven immigration policy. So I'm for the explanation of last resort. Otherwise, it's inexplicably dumb.
Yeah. I suspect that even the people in Koch who want a more restrained foreign policy are probably may agree with the dead brother on immigration. Who knows? It's just that I just thought maybe there would be more of a relative emphasis on foreign policy with only one brother left. But I digress. So here's the question, does any of this matter? I mean, you're acting like she's toast in any event once she gets to South Carolina. Isn't South Carolina where she was governor or something? Or was that North Carolina?
Right. And she's still losing to Trump there. She's not toast. She's not toast. She's surging in exactly on paper the way Gary Hart surged, except she's surging a little ahead of time. And only Gary Hart, didn't surge until like a couple of days from now. But, the caucuses are on Monday, so she only has 4 days. Only 4 days left, but she's way ahead of where Gary Hart was in New Hampshire. I mean, she's closing in on Trump, 44-28 or something. Or she's within single digits in some polls. Mm-hmm. And if you added the Christie vote, definitely within single digits. So she's not toast. And I don't quite see why. Her governorship doesn't seem to give her more boost in South Carolina, but it doesn't in the polls. But the night is young. All sorts of things could happen. People said Trump had a competing town hall. I didn't see it. People say he was very effective. He tried to tone down some of his more, controversial comments like, I'm going to be a dictator on day one. Although I thought that was, he was trying to say, I'm not going to be a dictator my entire term just for one day, but hey,
did he repeat the "I am your retribution" line? That's a little concerning to me.
I think he tried to tone that one down too. Mm-hmm. She represents a strain within the Republican Party that's still there, and a yearning for some alternative to Trump that is still there. And I'm just amazed that she's gotten the traction she's gotten, and that's in itself significant. The key point is she wants to return to a sort of state-of-the-art 1990s Republicanism that does nothing to address the larger concerns that we've talked about here, like, maybe the economy is good, but I'm really unhappy with the direction our society is going. We're going to be we've lost touch with our communities. We're lonely. We're separated by the acrimony and divisiveness of the web. Artificial intelligence is going to put us all out of work and maybe take over humanity and maybe kill us all. You know, we have, you know, various potential bioweapons that might kill us all. We're just not happy. You have to address these larger bad trends.
You think bioweapons is what's got America down? That's the source of the ennui.
They read every day that there are things. I mean, maybe they just read the Drudge Report or some other place, but they read every day that there's something coming that's going to completely fuck up their lives. And Nikki Haley's offering them the elimination of the federal gas tax. I'm sorry, that doesn't address the problem.
I haven't heard Trump address the bioweapons threat.
I'm just talking about bioweapons threat. It's part of the AI threat. It's the AI will let people develop bioweapons.
What is Trump saying about what's Trump's 10-point AI plan?
I don't think he doesn't address
more bots, more pro-Trump bots on Twitter. What?
He's retro too. He wants to make America great again. He's not really addressing these concerns, and if he's just addressing more of them, the immiseration of the white working class, than the Democrats are, who have thrown the white working class on the scrap heap of history. Although so Biden denies it, effectively he has.
Is your man DeSantis dead, or just dead?
No.
Just dead.
He's not dead. He's not dead if he beats Haley in Iowa.
But that's not going to happen. He's sinking in Iowa. And he was not. Beat Haley. Okay, beat Haley.
There's another poll that hasn't even. Supposedly, he has a superior ground organization.
But the polls in New Hampshire look bad for him, right? I mean, you're expecting him. You think a second place finish Iowa springboards him to something, to what, in New Hampshire?
Something respectable enough that he can stay in the race. Remember, Biden did not finish respectably in New Hampshire. He got walloped in New Hampshire. He figured, I think he polled at Kaus-like levels, which would be 5%.
Ooh.
Maybe better than that. But he just got creamed in New Hampshire. That didn't stop him. So DeSantis is going to say it shouldn't stop him, and why not? He has to find someplace after South Carolina to make his stand, and I haven't thought that far in advance, but I'm sure he has.
So you're the one person who thinks that Trump is not sure to be the candidate barring actual imprisonment? I thought that was the conventional wisdom.
That may be the conventional wisdom. Why isn't the conventional wisdom he's sure to be the candidate even if he is imprisoned? I don't understand why that doesn't solidify his you know, base vote. I guess there's some.
That's true. I mean, I guess you can run from prison. You have to do more virtual appearances, I guess, than you used to do. But I guess you can run for prison.
Usually the less we see of Trump, the better. So prison might be good for him. The other thing is, the appeal is not going to be final, certainly by the election, even if they manage to squeak in a conviction. And DeSantis was right in the debate. He said Trump is going to be convicted. I mean, look at all those juries. They're all going to convict Trump. He's going to be convicted every single fucking one of these.
All it takes is one Trump supporter on a jury.
They're mostly bogus.
But aren't there some Trump supporters on juries in America?
Not in the District of Columbia. I don't know why you would expect, but that hasn't. I don't think that's happened. I mean, there have been a couple of hung juries, I guess. So that's a good point.
Only takes one.
But not in every state, but most states. There are some states that have changed that.
So you think he will actually be convicted of a crime?
I don't think that will stop him.
Right.
But you know, the combination of crime and Haley beating him and taking the luster and him overreacting to Haley and lashing out in an egomaniacal fashion might do something. The other wild card is what my friend John Ellis pointed out. Robert Kennedy is getting 18% in some polls.
I was going to ask about this. Who does Kennedy hurt? Who does he hurt within the Republican Party? And then who does he hurt in the general? I assume he hurts Trump a little more than Biden, but what do you think?
I thought he hurt Trump, but the polls I've seen don't show that. But Ellis claims that Trump is convinced that, I believe, that he hurts him. So he's going to make Kennedy his running mate. So then you have, and apparently Bannon is urging this on him. So you have a Trump-Kennedy ticket, and that sort of seems like it might work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Kennedy doesn't have any impact on the Republican nomination. So I withdraw that other question. But,
You know, and the Kennedy's going to have trouble getting on the ballot. So he'll jump at this chance, obviously. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting. There are a couple of polls that definitely caused a bedwetter comeback on the Democratic side, including Obama, who apparently freaked out, or at least had a meeting scheduled with Biden where he freaked out. I mean, there's a poll showing Trump ahead in Michigan, which is...
Oh, yeah. No, Biden's in deep trouble. Deep.
I mean, at least it's a 50-50 proposition. And if you think democracy is at stake, you don't want a 50-50 proposition.
Oh, I think Biden wishes it were a 50-50. I mean, if he knows what he's doing. I mean, look, the Gaza thing is a mess for him. And Ukraine, as I suggested some months ago to you on this podcast, Gaza.
Oh, yeah.
It's pure trouble. Can't win. And
I don't think foreign policy is that important.
No, but here's I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know exactly what kind of people would volunteer to work on a Biden campaign to begin with. But traditionally, it's like the young people in the party who do a lot of the hard work in election, go door to door and so on. And they're the ones who are most upset about this and are going to actually remember it. I mean, if the war ends pretty soon, your average American will begin to forget it. But there's some pretty pissed off young Democrats, and I think with good reason, personally.
You're not impressed with Biden restraining Netanyahu, but with his private admonitions.
He's really pulling out the big guns, boy. He's completely controlled the weapons and ammo.
I haven't followed this, but hasn't he? Netanyahu into saying we won't occupy Gaza and we won't relocate its people.
Well, the most recent, within the last day or two, he finally got Netanyahu to say that. Now, if you know Netanyahu, you know that what he says has absolutely no correlation with his future behavior. He's the most deceitful, treacherous, untrustworthy human in the history of our species, which, as you know, is saying something. But so I don't know. I wouldn't put a ton of stock in that. I suppose that's something, but look, we don't have to get me on this subject yet, but
neither Haley or DeSantis is going to satisfy you on Israel, because both of them say we have to support Israel and give them whatever they want and support them in private and public. So yeah. Public and private.
No politician, even Robert Kennedy, who on foreign policy is in many ways, an iconoclast. He recently, Jim Webb, his foreign policy advisor, who was the son of the other Jim Webb, recently resigned,
right,
in protest against RFK's policy on Israel and Gaza because Kennedy is so pro-Israel. Yeah.
DeSantis is way more in your direction on Ukraine.
Yeah.
He thinks, Nikki, here's what Nikki Haley said. She says, if Putin wins in Ukraine, Poland and the Balkans are next. And some of them are NATO countries. And so we will be at war. So that's why we have to support Ukraine. She said her gimmick there is, I don't want to send them cash because that'll be stolen. I just want to send them weapons. Well, that's complete bullshit. Obviously, they need cash. So we are sending them cash. And if there were a combination of cash and weapons, she would vote for it. So. And then she said, this is the key sentence. If Ukraine wins, China won't invade Taiwan. We know that. Does that make any sense to you?
I understand the argument, but it seems like you could just as well argue that if Ukraine wins, China will say, well, we're not going to make Russia's mistake. We're going to invade before the U.S. floods the place with more weapons and advisors. I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, also, also there, you know, the geography is different. The you know, there are a lot of things that are different between Ukraine and Taiwan.
I actually don't think that's quite as stupid as saying that he's going to invade Poland next. And, you know, that's complete batshit crazy. But whereas I don't purport to know exactly how China is processing all this. And you can make arguments either way. But the idea that Putin, you know, has his sights on Poland, I think, is nuts. Anyway, Haley is just go ahead.
So here's my basic rather. They had this debate, and it was one of those things where, on paper, if you read the debate, you would say DeSantis probably won. The same way you would say that DeSantis creamed Newsom if you read it on paper. Mm-hmm. If you watch the debate, I think you'd say Haley won just because of body language and charm and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And he instead, he should say, and she also complained a lot that he was demeaning her. Okay. And this resonates with women. I'm sorry to say it.
He should say, don't play the woke card on us. Don't play the identity politics card.
Except grow there are a lot of women who aren't.
No, he shouldn't say grow a pair, but he should stop just short.
There are a lot of women who aren't woke who I'm afraid are sensitive to the demeaning charge. You know, when Rick Lazio went and slapped the paper down in front of Hillary Clinton and said, sign this pledge. I forget what the pledge was. And everybody said that, all the women said that reminded them of their first husband and, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's why they left him. They weren't woke. They were just sort of super sensitive to men being macho bullies. And so I'm worried that this does resonate, that it was actually a smart thing for her to say, because he was niggling her on, you know, on taking past. It was all very oppo. It was like, you said that, you know, you opposed the wall. Well, it's a little more complicated than that. She probably didn't like the wall, but she was careful to cover her ass. And, you know, you said this, and it was, you know, it's a little more complicated than that. If you go to, she has this website up, DeSantis Lies, okay? It's not as horrible as I hoped it would be. Okay. So, I mean, she has a case.
You mean DeSantisLies.com wasn't as horrible as you hoped it would be?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't as unconvincing as I hoped it would be. I thought it was just going to be, we disagree on policy, so I'm calling it a lie. No, he called it a lie. And if you look at the larger context, I was smart enough to cover my ass. Okay. What he should have said is, I admire Haley's competence and, you know, and blah, 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 but unfortunately she has sold her soul to donors on immigration and foreign policy. She is just an old fashioned globalist, on both those issues. And she sincerely believes it, but she's dead wrong, and it's wrong for America. Okay. And you paint those broad brushes and she can't deny them. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's true. And he looks less demeaning. Okay, he's respecting her as sort of the...
What was her line that was the equivalent of your mansplaining or your whatever? What did she say to him that put him on his
heel? Hit a nerve.
What's that?
I think I've hit a nerve was her big line, I think. She had a couple of good lines.
Oh, that was it. So she didn't explicitly play the identity politics. I mean, she didn't explicitly say, you're treating me like a woman or...
No, she said, but she said, this is demeaning about 12 times. She was obviously programmed to use the word demean, and she used it. And that it was obviously meant demeaning because you're a man and I'm a woman. And that was obvious emotional undercurrent.
Because I thought that earlier debate, I haven't watched any of them, but I saw this clip from the earlier one where they were everybody was hitting her hard, and Chris Christie steps in and, you know, and chivalrously defends her as if she's not capable of defending herself.
Right.
That seemed to me kind of weird. That seemed to me, right? Like, what?
That's the white knight syndrome. Very masculine behavior.
Yeah.
But
and we saw what happened to him. So
the difference is when Ramaswamy attacked her, she seemed really shaken because he was really vicious. And she didn't quite know how to respond. And now she knows how to respond because DeSantis isn't quite that vicious. And she was incredibly sleazy back to DeSantis. There's this Congressman Thomas Massie, who's DeSantis's great pal. Okay, they sat next to each other in Congress person. And he has a policy of never voting for unimportant, non-binding sort of statements of Congress. So if you, if Congress declares, you know, the family is good, he will vote against it. Ann Coles said, if you had a resolution that said puppies are cute, he would vote against it. So they had a resolution saying we are against anti-Semitism, and he voted against it. So she, in her speech, said, and you brought the America's most notorious anti-Semite into Iowa and campaigned with him. Well, and he said, you know, that's just disgusting filth or something. He was so offended, and rightly so. But so she's, you know, she's capable of being more vicious than DeSantis was, certainly.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's also depressing. There's not a single candidate I actually could possibly get excited about in either party who's actually running. I finally figured out who, you know, if Obama had done what I recommended on our podcast, which I thought would be enough to get him to do it, frankly, but and helped orchestrate, you know, this coup where they pushed Biden off stage and got like an open competitive primary in the Democratic Party. I finally figured out who I think Tim Kaine. Did I mention him before? I think Tim Kaine would be good. He would crush.
He's proven loser.
He would crush Trump.
He was a proven loser.
He was in the vice presidential slot and he lost. It happens.
He's a perfectly decent man who is completely wrong.
That's all you
wrong
need to win. America wants a decent man. That's they want a decent man who doesn't have dementia. It, you know.
No, they want.
What?
They want.
And plus one they definitely think is decent.
Somebody who is. They need somebody who gives them hope about the future. And I don't think Tim Kaine is that man.
He's a smart guy. He's.
There was also that ridiculous hype about how he's fluent in Spanish. And then he gave a speech in Spanish and I could understand every word. OK, well, if he was fluent in Spanish, I would not be able to understand every word. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, he could out. He's a nice guy. Spanish Trump. So, and meanwhile, are there technically Democratic primaries because this guy Dean Phillips signed up for them and got on the ballot? Like, is the Iowa caucuses happening on the Democratic side? Did they happen on the same date back when
the Iowa caucuses have been castrated on the Democratic side? With good reason,
they moved them back further because Iowa fucked up last time.
It's worse than that. I think they're taking cards on Monday, the same day as the other ones or some other day, but they're holding them until after some March deadline when the DNC said they could, you know, jump into the race. So they're keeping them secret. And I don't even know if they have an effect, but nobody is treating the Democratic primary as if it's anything here. It's like, it's a non primary. It's been castrated by the Democratic National Committee and Biden. New Hampshire, they tried to castrate it, but the New Hampshire people resisted, and so they're still having this vote, and so Biden is at the stage of write-in campaign to go against Phillips, but Phillips is not doing very well at all. Come back all time.
What do you mean a write-in campaign? He's not on the ballot.
Biden isn't on the ballot. Phillips is. Yes, Biden said this isn't the primary. The DNC isn't going to allow it, so I'm not on the ballot. And New Hampshire said, well, fuck you, we're going ahead and holding it. And Biden did what Lyndon Johnson had to do against McCarthy, which is run a write-in campaign. I don't know why. I forget why Johnson had to do it. But, you know, Johnson beat McCarthy by like a few votes, but performance was so bad he dropped out of the race. Biden's write-in is, you know, beating Phillips and Marianne Williamson like 60-8%. So Phillips has to come back, come back in an unprecedented way to do what he has to do in New Hampshire. And if he doesn't win in New Hampshire, I mean, that's his shot. I don't know. I don't know where else you could possibly have that impact, because the other states are much bigger money. New Hampshire, you can actually walk and talk to people and have an impact without spending.
He seems kind of like a transparent fraud too. Have you seen him in action?
No,
he's just one of these guys who's it's like all talking points. He's completely convinced. He's almost worse than conventional on foreign policy. He's a little like Ramaswamy in the sense of, like, you know, trying to come out with the out of the box idea that, you know, will take the world by storm. He's not as outside of the box as Ramaswamy, but I find him totally unimpressive.
That's what we try to do here on this podcast, Bob.
We're outside of the box.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of us is, Bob.
We both are, just in different ways. And then there's some intersection of the Venn diagram of our out of the boxness a little bit. But the
other interesting thing is the person who wasn't attacked in the debate and wasn't even attacked in this Nikki Haley rally I went to is Biden. It's bizarre. Usually Republicans attack the Democrat.
Yeah.
The only person Nikki Haley attacked was Kamala. They play the Kamala hard. They don't play the Biden card. She didn't even make the obvious point that Biden is too old and Kamala is going to succeed him.
Isn't that the subtext of attacking Kamala?
That's the subtext. Our nation can't afford Kamala Harris. Okay. Yes, she said that, but that's the subtext. But she didn't make it explicit because that would turn into attack on Biden. So is it because, you know, in New Hampshire, Democrats can cross over. So even in Iowa, people have changed their registration to Republican so they can vote in the caucuses for Haley. So she may not be wanting to offend Democrats, which ordinarily is not such a bad thing. But in the persona of Nikki Haley, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I forget if it's just independents or anybody can vote for Republicans in New Hampshire. But now, she's going to get a lot of crap.
Now, Chris Christie dropping out does help Nikki Haley. Is that the conventional wisdom is right there?
That's the conventional wisdom, and I've tried to find why that wouldn't be true, and I can't. So I think it will help.
Traditionally, in situations like this, the candidate who's dropping out might place a phone call to the candidate who's going to be helped and kind of, you know, without getting any kind of guarantee, suggest that they might wind up with a cabinet position or something. But if you're going to do that, I think that happened?
Oh, yeah.
Well, but if you're going to do that, I don't recommend being caught on a hot mic saying she doesn't have what it takes. Right? That's what he said about it.
Right. That he's an egomaniac and he pissed on everybody. Yes.
He's so great. It's a real loss for the race, I think, that he's out of it. I mean, you must have lamented that, right? There's only one person left with high entertainment value, and that's Ramaswamy.
No, I hate Chris. He has no entertainment value for me. I admit he took out Marco Rubio. So that was a service to the nation.
Yeah, but his legacy is secure. It was a suicide bombing that the world will never forget.
There used to be like there'd be a debate and then the advisors would gather and spin the reporters like in the same debate room, and then all of a sudden they formalized this previously sleazy ritual and made a separate spin room called spin room where everybody went to get spun, which basically means, you know, manipulated and defrauded. So maybe there'll be a separate room after a talk. There'll be the hot mic room where you go and you say all the hot mic things that would have been caught by a hot mic and you sort of want to get out there, but don't want to say in the formal thing.
That's a great idea. The AI deepfakes, the AI deepfakes have definitely gotten to a point where what we should have is just a stampede of fake hot mic moments. Because all you have to do is feed it like a couple of minutes of Chris Christie actually talking, and then you can have him say anything. You can alter his face accordingly. I want to see more of this, except not with him, with, you know, the rest.
That would be good. I have a classic Nikki Haley thing, piece of bullshit. She's talking about how, you know, she talked about the root causes of immigration mm-hmm. and how a lot of these people are fleeing gang violence. I mean, if you talk about that, there's no way that she's going to be tough on the border. But
that's,
anyway,
that's leftist. The very phrase root causes is like didn't a left use the wing thing.
Causes, oh, okay. But she talked about root causes. These people, and she said, and we should, what we should need to do is go down there and teach them how to fight gangs. Okay. Now that's, I'm sorry. We're not going to teach them how to fight gangs. That's like saying we're going to rebuild Afghanistan in our image. This is not going to happen. It's a fantasy of American, I don't know, imperialism that we can go and quickly, you know, change a rooted culture of an impoverished society like that. It just ain't going to happen. So if you say that, you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. And it is specifically a neocon idiot.
I'm inclined to agree.
That seems to be an insight into how she thinks. On the other hand, you know, in the retro 90s, retro 80s portion, she on Social Security, she's obviously right. We do need to change the retirement age. She even mentioned means testing, you know, so
yeah.
It's a little hard to dump on her when she's right, but
I'd be happy to do that. But
Social Security isn't the most pressing issue right now. It's so bad it's going to take care of itself. We have to deal with it. So
I find her deeply abhorrent personally, but then again, I put a lot of emphasis on foreign policy. I guess on balance, I find DeSantis less objectionable. Trump, I got to say, I find terrifying. I mean, you know, what people are saying is true. This time he's going to know what he's doing. If he's president, he will, like, when he promotes the generals to, you know, to a point where they could be on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, when he selects the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, there's going to be one criterion, loyalty to Trump. Same with the attorney general, head of the FBI, head of the CIA. As you know, I'm not a huge alarmist. I'm not like David Frum on this subject, but it's kind of scary.
But don't you sort of assume that the heads of those agencies are loyal? I mean, the problem is he's going to ask them to do evil, illegal things.
It's that combination. A, last time around, he didn't choose for loyalty. I mean, Mark Milley wasn't ultimately, he briefly looked like he might be too loyal, but backed off. Same with Attorney General Barr. There were his administration was full of people who would not carry water for him in the end. That's not going to be the case this time, A. And B, that other thing you mentioned, asking them to do illegal shit, right? That's what Trump will do that a lot of presidents wouldn't do, or at least wouldn't do much of. That's the terrifying combination. He's going to continue to want them to do the illegal things. And this time, they're going to be the kind of people who would say yes. And his base is more revved up because they feel that he's been systematically persecuted, up to and including having his election victory stolen from him. So, I mean, it's all, and, you know, all the sources of domestic tension are there. It's bad.
You think there are enough people in the country who are remotely qualified for any of these positions, who will be that loyal?
Remote qualification, I don't think, is going to matter. I mean,
you have to be confirmed by Congress. So much depends on who wins the Congress. Yes, if you get 70% of the Congress, like FDR had, sure, but that's not going
to
happen.
Well, that's true. I mean, who does have to be confirmed by Congress of these people? Well, all the cabinet level positions.
Certainly the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, certainly the head of the CIA, certainly the head of the FBI.
That's kind of reassuring, but I mean, what do you think is the most senators they'll have, like 55 or something?
The other thing is, sorry?
What do you think is the most senators, Republican senators they'll have? Because every Republican senator is terrified of him, apparently. So will he have like 55 or something? I guess, yeah, he's 54. Not going to have 67.
54 is about if the Republicans end up with 54, they will be doing spectacularly well. I don't think they're going to retake the Senate. So I think they're going to end up with 49.
But all he needs, all he needs to pack the cabinet is 51, right?
No. I mean, that's a good question.
I'm trying to think. Do you need two? No, it's just advice and consent of the Senate is what it says in the Constitution, and that is translated into a sheer mere majority, right?
The other thing is that assuming he abides by the Constitution, he's term limited. Now, one possibility is he won't abide by the Constitution, and as he nears the end of his second term at age 95 or however old he'll be, he will want to somehow finagle his way out of it the way Bloomberg finagled his way out of a less effective two-term limit in New York. But if he's only one term, he's a lame duck, and there are going to be more and more people in Congress willing to defy him, I would think.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, they still fear his base. They still fear him telling his base that they betrayed him. That's
only if they're up for re-election. If they've just been re-elected, I think they'll have some. The other factor is that he still craves the approval of the New York Times. I think maybe not.
I think he's given up on that. He's a realistic man.
He's from Queens. He wants the people in Manhattan to like him. Okay, I guess that's right.
No, it's disturbing. I mean, and on the military thing, the thing is, he already has a lot of support among rank and file soldiers. And the saving grace has been that at the, kind of flag officer level, it was harder to find ardent supporters of him. But he gets to, I don't know what role the president plays in promoting generals generally, but I think he can get any general promoted that he wants to get promoted, right?
I would think so.
I think he can turn a lieutenant colonel into a lieutenant general overnight, probably. It's happened.
I'm not so sure. You think they can do that?
Didn't Eisenhower get promoted three levels when they did or something?
He couldn't say, Private Bob Wright, you're now chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? Probably not.
I'm available, by the way. Speaking of which, here's a question. Is Colonel McGregor, will he have a role in a Trump administration?
Is he Trumpy?
Oh, totally Trumpy. He's Trumpier than Trump. I mean, he's a true Buchananite conservative through and through.
Has he been vindicated by the course of the war in Ukraine?
Well, closer than the blob. I mean, he's been hyperbolic. He's in his own direction. Like any day now, Russia's going to take all of Ukraine, and that keeps not happening. But compared to the Michael McFalls who were saying any moment now Ukraine is going to take Crimea, he looks good. And we are now to the point where it looks like Russia could actually start gaining some ground. As Mickey, you may recall, one of us warned against. And before the Ukrainian summer offensive, one of us said they shouldn't do it. They should play defense instead with all this shiny new equipment they've got, and they'd be way better off if they had.
It's now become a thing to discuss, did we miss the chance for peace? I sent you an article which I didn't read. Did you read it?
No, because I know the answer. I wrote the Washington Post piece in December of 2022.
But if the conventional wisdom is now validating you, shouldn't you be happy the way Trump would be happy if the New York Times validated him?
Well, no, because it's not about Bob, Mickey. It's about the fate of the world, Although, of course, there's some virtue in Bob being vindicated. But the thing is, I've learned from bitter experience that my being right time after time after time in foreign policy does not get me to be head of the Council on Foreign Relations. God knows I've lobbied for that position. It just doesn't happen.
The conservative Victor Davis Hanson, you're familiar with him. He's sort of a
nut is the word you're looking for, I think.
He's pro-Trump. He's a classical military historian. He claims that the new incoming chairman of the Joint Chiefs is okay, unlike that clown Milley. So, he's an Italian. He has an Italian name, like Sorelli or something. But
Is that right? I'm trying to. I'll Google this while you're. No, anyway, Milley's among the people who could have run, who would have been a fine Democratic presidential candidate this year. But let me see who the chairman of.
Anyway,
no, it's that's what I thought. It's Charles Q. Brown. He's black. He's not Italian.
Hmm. Well, maybe he's just on the Joint Chiefs. Maybe he's not chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
What, the Italian guy?
Yeah.
Well, there are definitely Italians who are not chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I know several. Yes. You're vindicated again. You were correct.
We were on the Joint Chiefs. There are like five
on,
Joint Chiefs.
On the, yeah. Yeah. There's one from each military branch.
Anyway, another crazy thing. A couple of things. DeSantis is bashing EVs, so that's become a Republican thing.
Huh.
They're both Trump and DeSantis saying they're going to save the American automobile. I would not rule that out as a powerful issue, even though I think DeSantis eventually will concede that eventually probably electric vehicles are going to take hold. You know, but Biden is moving too fast, et cetera, and he leaves that the part that we're all going to end up driving EVs vague. But that is interesting. It's a you know, if you just get approval in the press from promoting EV targets and pushing for EVs, there's some backlash there that the press ain't telling you about, and
well,
people
you know
go on trips.
You knew this is bad news for if Trump and his competitors are turning on EVs, right?
Elon Musk,
because he's more and more dependent on a red state constituency, at least for American sales. Now that so many blue state elites are more or less boycotting his brand, right? So he needs the red staters to buy the Cybertruck pronto.
But they aren't. They're buying them and gritting their teeth and saying, I hate having to buy the Tesla. I mean, Jim Fallows bought a Tesla.
Yeah, but when? He didn't buy it in the last year, I'll bet.
Oh, totally. He wrote a long, agonizing article saying, how can I buy? I can't buy an Elon Musk car. I'm looking for the alternatives. And then he wrote a column saying, well, I bought a Tesla. I guess I hate it. I hate Elon Musk, but I like this car.
Jim. This is really...
What can I say? She also, Haley also has this crazy idea that she wants to cut spending to pre-pandemic levels, which seems insane. A classic bit of, late 20th century budget politics is, let's freeze the budget at pre-pandemic levels. So, I mean, that's something Ernest Hollings would say, and he would have been right when he said it, but it's just not our politics now. But you pointed out that Trump does not have a vision for how America is going to be great again. Like he says, he's going to make America great, but he doesn't say quite how. Somebody who said we're going to retake the lead in AI, we're going to do this, we're going to decouple from China.
Retake the lead in AI? I think we're actually ahead in AI.
Okay, but
come on, don't be talking my country down, man.
Protect our lead in AI.
Well, but Biden's already, got that kind of locked up, having launched his chip war against China and deprived them of the cutting edge chips,
Right.
So
he doesn't, but he doesn't say, and the second part is we're going to retake the lead in AI and it's going to be good for us because we're going to have all these drugs. It's going to do all these routine jobs that everybody hates. It's not going to, put out of work everybody. With an IQ under 120, although
it's going to put out of work everybody with an IQ over 120.
It's going to put out them and over 140. So only the people who have an IQ of 130 will survive.
Yeah, there's a narrow band of people who have a productive life ahead of them, and the rest are heading for the metaverse. And I will see them there. I'm looking forward to it.
Really, because Jack Schaefer just tweeted, remember the metaverse as if the metaverse had died.
Mm-mm.
You claim the metaverse.
That's where we're heading, buddy. Just give me UBI and Quest 5 or whatever they're on, and I'm a happy guy.
And some pellets? You need food pellets, right?
I want food pellets. And I want to wait until the AI bots are slightly more lifelike, the 3D AI bots who cater to my every need.
Okay. I won't follow that word, the obvious direction.
Actually, no. This is for you. This is like life coaching for you, Mickey. I am happily married, but I bring good news to you. Increasingly lifelike AI bots who meet your every need.
Right, right. Will they clean up my house?
Every basic need.
Now you're talking.
You laugh, but at the current consumer electronics show, whatever, in Vegas, both LG and Samsung unveiled physical bots that roll around your house saying, "What can I do for you?" Now, they can't clean, but how hard can it be to say to them, "Yeah, could you get the Roomba to go vacuum this room?" Right? You know, the Roomba. Do you have a Roomba?
Are they going to? I want them to anticipate my every need. I don't have to boss them around. That takes time.
Elon's working on that. He's going to have the brain chip that senses people who want when they want the room vacuumed, like the thing, the Roomba springs into action because they're like in the metaverse. They don't want to be bothered. They're having an encounter with an increasingly lifelike 3D being that meets their every need, if you know what I mean.
If the 3D bot can be the shy librarian type,
that's how choose your game, choose your plot. But the interesting thing is with AI, even you don't know how things are going to work out. So oops, boyfriend shows up and blows your fucking head off, man. That's going to be the drama in the metaverse.
Is this in the metaverse or the real world?
What?
Does he blow my head off in the metaverse or in the real world?
That's the thing. You can have it either way. See, that's where Elon's brain chips come in. If you sign up for the high stakes version of the metaverse, boyfriend shows up, shoots you, you actually die in real life. This can happen. We can bring this to you.
You know, there are people who are now being charged with rape in the metaverse.
Raping who? Raping other people they're encountering other in the metaverse? Raping the avatars of actual people.
Yes.
Well, you shouldn't do that.
Seems like a legal stretch to me. But
well, not as much as raping a bot that isn't anybody's avatar. That would call for even more creative legal reasoning, I think.
Right. But they're obviously going to pass laws to make it illegal, but
no, it's going to get wild. Yeah. And I shouldn't joke because I'm not sure I'm optimistic about where we're heading.
Yep. The other encouraging thing was that DeSantis is running as, you know, more right wing than he actually is. There are sort of signs of bipartisan appeal that he's letting leak out. He's talking about letting people buy cheaper drugs from Canada. Well, that's a Democratic staple. I think it's bogus, but it's a Democratic staple. He opposed fracking in the Everglades and Haley attacked him for it. But it seems to me if you live in Florida and you value the Everglades as this wonderful natural attraction, you don't want fracking under it. Mm-hmm. He talked about how we have to be nice to people at the end of life as well as being pro-life at the beginning of life, which you could extend. I think he means we don't let you pull the plug. Yeah. And we're anti.
So he's got your vote. This is like half of your nightmares involve the plug being pulled, right?
Correct. And he talks a lot about the poor, and he comes across as not somebody who does not care about non-white people. But one of the things was they both bizarrely. This is how stupid Mickey is, okay? They both bizarrely talked about, they say voters constantly talk about the mental health crisis, how we need more mental health counseling, we need more staff, we need more money put into it, because there are all these people wandering around with mental health problems. There's some horrifying percentage of people who have mental health problems, and they're curable with drugs, so we need this infrastructure to take care of them. And I thought this is wonderful, this is patriotic, these two people have both reconciled themselves with active affirmative government to help people in need. And then it was pointed out to me by this, 18-year-old who was sitting next to me at the rally. No, that's how they deal with gun violence. They say instead of banning guns, we need better mental health programs. And, it, you know, and if we treated these people, they wouldn't become mass shooters. Seems an unconvincing argument, but it could also be sincere. It could be that the need to deal with the gun argument has led them to sincerely care about mental health. I don't know. Anyway, I'm all for that. In my two favorite, the two issues I care about most were at moments of peril. In immigration, there's now this deal that's supposedly cooking where in exchange for Ukraine aid, the Biden administration will make some concessions to the Republicans. But it turns out that, you know, the Biden idea of making concessions involves a whole lot of sweeteners for the Democrats, a little amnesty for the so-called documented dreamers, you know, an increase in this category and that category. And the enforcement provisions are pretty wimpy. The classic example being, we're going to change the standard from to let you into the country from credible fear to reasonable fear. Or and it's been proven that that has no effect at all, because the credible fear standard is imposed by these immigration judges who have a very clear idea of who they should let in. And they let in 70% of the people, and Trump, Steve Miller in Trump's administration tried desperately to get it down to 60%, and I think he failed. So changing the standard, they're just going to say, we're still going to approve the same 70% we always approved. And the other thing is something called expedited removal, which does not result in removal. So they're two like bullshit things and a bunch of goodies for the Democrats, which is very unfortunate because.
So are we never going to get a deal that leads to the big Ukraine aid package happening? I mean, I would think there's also an issue on the other side, which is that I might think that Republicans would worry about doing Biden the kind of political favor of having him sign a bill that actually did a lot of the things they want to do on the border, right? Because then he'd kind of get credit for it in the general, and he could always tell the people in his party who hated he had to do it. And is that wrong?
Yeah, it seems they're definitely worried about that. But there are two forms of the worry. One is they're worried that they will sign up for a deal that doesn't do the job, but they'll still wind up owning sort of being responsible for the continuation of the border crisis, and they won't even achieve any of their goals. And the other thing is, what if Biden actually did reverse field and endorse some of the things, you know, like remain in Mexico, that probably would do the job? And how would Republicans react? Would they rather have the issue or actually solve the problem? That's a difficult one. But they're definitely worried about, you know, about the what I call, you know, the briar patch. They're throwing Biden in, they're helping Biden go where he wants to go. He's happy pissing off the left, but if you can say the Republicans made him do it, then it's easier for him.
If Trump wins and has a Republican Senate, will he build like the whole wall? He'll build a lot of wall this time, right? I mean,
you would think, but you know, but we're way beyond the wall being enough to stop the problem, because the problem is, you know, the legal loophole of amnesty for people who show up at the wall and, you know, they go through the gates and they.
So what will he do about that?
If you can stop them from ever setting foot on U.S. soil, the wall would have a big effect. But still, they could show up. And what would deal with that? Well, that's the dilemma. You have to remain in Mexico deals with that. It says you can claim amnesty, but while we hear your case, and we know that 90% of the cases are turned down, you can wait in Mexico while we take 2 years to turn down your case, and then you have to go back home. Well, that's not a very appealing prospect. So if you do that, nobody's going to come. That worked for Trump.
Really such a strong political reason that Biden can't do that? I mean,
bizarre.
That he doesn't?
Yeah, that's why I asked. I was sitting in front of former Congressman Will Hurd, who's a Republican from a border district, and I said, what's going on with the Biden administration that they won't do this obvious thing, which is stop listening to the left on all these remedies. And he gave a long answer that basically amounted to, I don't know either.
What negative partisanship, I think that's a term for when, like, you hate the other side so much that whatever they propose, you oppose. And
yeah, well, that's a lot of
that. And Trump, you know, this kind of happened. I mean, Trump, I mean, he was saying various things about immigration that I objected to strenuously, especially in terms of how you treat people who are already there, who are already here. But, you know, the idea of tightening up on the border, if you remember early on after Trump won in 2016, Peter Beinart came out and said, you know, maybe Democrats need to rethink this and reposition themselves on this. And I mean, it was a hail of bullets. He had to backtrack so fast. There was no tolerance for doing anything that Trump wanted to do. And I'm not even talking about building a wall. I'm just talking about saying, right. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a reason they call it legal immigration, right? You define what legal immigration is and try to confine the immigrants to legal ones. That's what an immigration policy is. But that was impermissible. And I think, you know, Democrats would be in better shape and Trump would be in worse shape if they listened to people.
There are people, there are certainly important strategists like Roy Teixeira, mm-hmm. and I can't believe Carville isn't saying this also, who are urging that course. And then we have the example of Fetterman, who, after coming out of his depression, has declared we need to get a little tougher on the border, and his polls have gone up. So even among Democrats. So you would think Biden would be reading that poll and taking the obvious message, but we don't. They have made noises about bringing back Remain in Mexico under some other name, so they won't seem like Trump's plan. And the other problem with Remain in Mexico is the left claims that the conditions in the camps where people remained in Mexico were bad. And the answer is, well, let's make the conditions better, mm-hmm. if that's what you want. But the point is, if you actually have people remain in Mexico, there's not going to be many people in these facilities because they ain't going to come. The only reason they come is because they can remain in the United States while they while their case is adjudicated. So the second big area of potential disaster is they are also reviving the refundable child tax credit. Bob, my other favorite.
I saw that in a headline and I thought, oh no. Mickey's going to talk
about
this.
And the key question is, does it have a work test? And it looks like they're going to have some work test, but you're going to be able to use last year's income to say, I work last year, so I get a free ride of child tax credits this year. Mm-hmm. And I guess the year after that, you won't get you have to work again. So you have to work like every other year. And the question people like me have to decide is that awful? And I haven't quite decided yet. I previously had thought, but I hadn't thought it through, that it wasn't awful. But you just want people to be part of the labor market and be sort of a working family that sends people into the workforce with some regularity. You don't want to have dropped out of the workforce. But other people on my side of the debate think that's not good enough. And it will be much, you know, the Democrats are not in any position to start demanding stuff like that. They should, you know, stick with the work-tested increase in benefits for working-class poor people. It'd be a good thing. It'd help them out. And it just is not the pure welfare program that they want.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see over the next few years. I don't mean like this year, but, you know, when AI does start lowering wages for more white collar workers and even maybe threatening some of them with unemployment, you know, how that rearranges politics, if at all. But I think it's going to happen.
I'm resisting the idea that it's going to make me an advocate of universal basic income.
Yeah, I have yet to be sold on that. But, you know, I mean, it's going to call for creative thinking and I don't know, some sort of safety nets are going to be more in order.
And I think I'm safe. I mean, who's going to do, Bob, what I'm doing now? Who's going to do the fake Nikki Haley support for the
have a bot that can hold up the sign that says pick Nikki.
No, absolutely not. So I'm okay, Jack.
You're good.
Yeah.
And what bot is going to want to talk to you? So as long as I'm having podcast conversations with you, that part of my job is secure, right?
You better cling to me pretty closely, Bob. I'm your lifeline.
My whole point is I don't have any competition, Mickey, because the bots, you know, the bots are true.
Hi, Migo and Ann Coulter's podcast on Sunday.
Any moment. And I'll tell you, she and I compete for exactly the same audience. So it's pretty threatening.
You're sort of on the same side of Ukraine.
We sort of are, actually.
She's very anti-Trump.
You know, she should have my last podcast guest. She should have on, assuming you'd want to go on her show. I'm not sure about it.
Who's the last podcast guest?
It was Steve Walt a few days ago.
Probably would.
Yeah, well.
Okay, I'll suggest it.
Suggest it. Sure.
Okay. So I think that's. I had one other thing to talk about, but you want to say, and I heard this from various people that Twitter is going down the tubes.
It's hard to say. It's like there are constituencies that are still there. It's now a lot of kind of mainstream media type people seem to have migrated to Threads, especially. It seems to me like of Mastodon, Threads, and Blue Sky. Threads is the most serious rival.
I went to Threads and tried to look for an intelligent conversation. It was just awful. It was like Facebook.
That's
everybody affirming their liberal prejudices.
Well, there's that. It may have the ideological slant that you notice more than I do, but I'll tell you, that's even worse on Blue. You would find it even worse on Blue Sky or Mastodon. I mean, your people have gone to whatever the right-wing alternative to Twitter is, right? What is the right-wing alternative? It's not Rumble, right? Rumble is video? Is Rumble video? Whatever it is. Oh, it's Truth. Truth Social, where you truth and retruth and quote truth. So anyway, it's weird. Now, kind of the hardcore are still there. First of all, there are whole areas. Like I have a list of AI people. And I think they're all just staying there. I mean, they don't give a shit. And some of them are probably Elon fans. Some aren't. It's just like they don't have time to like do a big virtue signaling thing about how they oppose Elon and so must find another platform. And it seems to me like a lot of the, the people really engaged in the debate over foreign policy are still there. One thing I've noticed is that the ratio of likes to retweets is getting lower. So and that may just be because I've been doing a lot of stuff on Gaza, and that what's happened as time has worn on is that the casual observer of affairs in the Middle East is less and less interested at all. And those are the people who might have liked something. And the super engaged people are still there and they're retweeting. So maybe Gaza specific.
It doesn't sound like you're, I mean, what we're talking about is not whether Twitter is going to fail financially, although it's connected, but has your experience been degraded? And you seem to say it has, and it sounds like it hasn't.
Well, has it? I mean, there's a weird thing. It's like the people who are retweeting me and liking, it's like, I don't know who the fuck they are. It used to be that I would recognize more people as people I knew who were doing the liking and the retweeting. And I think a certain number of them kind of have left. I certainly know people have left. If you add up all the people I know who've gone to either Mastodon or Blue Sky or Threads or all of the above, it's a non-trivial number of people, and they are not insignificant. A lot of the big names are on Threads. That's partly because they're so big that they have people doing their social media with them for them, so they don't even have to do that much work to build up the following. And also, they're such big names, they can just move a certain amount of their following from one platform to another. So,
a lot of the liberals and Democrats have left. I've noticed but aside from that, I find the quality of dialogue is no better or worse. The same, 50 people whose comments I respect and search for and value are still there, and maybe Josh Marshall has sort of vanished, and But in, you know, I have a bunch of readers who sometimes say smart things and sometimes don't, but it's basically the same experience. And crucially, I think the key people I hope to reach, like, you know, like reporters for major papers, enough of them are there to make it worth the while. There are probably fewer than there were before, but it's okay. It's still worth it. It hasn't been, I'm not bombarded with Nazis. I don't, I think yeah. Maybe it's because I paid the fucking $8. Do you pay the $8? I forget.
No, I don't pay the $8. Maybe I should, you know, it'd help the, but you're, of course, I mean, your ideology, the part that doesn't overlap with mine, is those people are more likely to hang around Twitter. I mean, you know, the, right. So on the other hand, the foreign policy part of my ideology, is sufficiently distinctive among liberals. I think it does.
But if you're on the left and you're on Twitter, you're facing a much more hostile crowd than you were before.
Right. Yeah. And I would notice that, well, unless you're, so far as foreign policy goes, unless you're on the kind of far left. I mean, those people are, I think those people are still there. But anyway, I don't know, but it's just like, it takes a lot of work to build up. I mean, my following, which isn't huge on Twitter, but it's not nothing. It took years and years to build up. It's like trying to start all over on Threads. Give me a break. So I don't know, but,
like it's the web equivalent of what I've concluded that is, if you work hard selflessly in a large organization for the good of the organization, there is no fucking payoff. You're an idiot. There maybe used to be a payoff if you worked at Bell Labs, and after you died, they can say, well, Bob Wright really did invent the transistor, so we should give him credit.
Which is true, by the way, yes.
But now with the, you know, corporations being disloyal and going broke and being bought again by venture fund people who fire everybody, there's just no reason to devote your life to your employer.
Well, and fewer and fewer people do it. There's like a disaggregation of, like, there's this story now is how this ESPN guy, nominally ESPN guy, what's his name? The former punter for some. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just
telling various ESPN executives to fuck off on the air. And it's kind of nothing they can do because he doesn't like really work for them. It's like, well, technically he's got his thing and it's licensed to them and it's a streaming thing and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's all one big network. So finally, go ahead.
Something happened with him today. I didn't click on it, but. Either he got fired or he pledged his loyalty. I forget which.
Oh, really? That would be news.
Sorry, you said
ESPN has some leverage. I'd be surprised if they take this completely lying down, but you never know. No, I was just going to say the thing. I mean, since there is no Parrot Room, the Parrot Room-esque thing I would talk about if there were Parrot Room is I got a little into the JFK assassination rabbit hole. You saw that I had Jeff Morley on, right, on my podcast. You retweeted that I had Jeff Morley on my podcast. Yeah. Man, I'm telling you, that's the rabbit hole of all rabbit hole. I'm fighting the good fight. I'm keeping from descending completely into the rabbit hole, but a person could spend a lot of time trying to get to the bottom of that thing. What?
What does Jeff say? What does Jeff from Morley say? Because he's a smart guy.
Oh, he's definitely that there was a conspiracy, which is no longer a radical position. But he goes, I gather from people can look at the podcast with him. You know, he's got this site called JFK Facts. I mean, first of all, Jeff, you know, when he broke important stories, like when he was at the Washington Post, I think he broke the story that the CIA liaison to the House Assassination Subcommittee, which in the 1970s revisited the thing and itself right. concluded that there was a good chance there had been a conspiracy. But I think
was
Jeff
the
broke
thing with the thing with the radio on the cop's motorcycle picking up an extra shot or something.
that figured, see, this, it's worrisome that I know this, that I can answer this question. That's what I mean. That's what I mean. There was a dicta belt on that was supposedly on a cop's motorcycle that picked up the shots, and that house committee did take that very seriously. Other people have claimed that they shouldn't have. I don't know to what extent that fed into their conclusion that there had been a conspiracy, but see what I mean? This is bad that I know this.
Anyway,
you want to know some other things I know? What?
No, you were explaining Jefferson Morley's scoop about the CIA liaison.
Yeah, the official CIA liaison to this House Subcommittee on Assassinations, if I'm understanding this correctly, it turns out, you know, there's two bodies of evidence that make you doubt the official story of one shooter, no conspiracy. One has to do with the shooting and the bullets and the witnesses and the grassy knoll and all that. And right. Then there's the part separate from all the ballistics and how many shots were shot that just is about the CIA's relationship to Oswald and
right.
And the relationship to the anti and the CIA's relationship to Oswald, to anti-Castro fanatics and the CIA's, like, for example, their support of their funding of the anti-Castro group, which, like, right after the assassination publicized the fact that Oswald had these pro-Castro leanings, right? And so, because a big part of the theory is that rogue agents in the government wanted, in effect, Castro to be blamed for the assassination by association so that the U.S. would finally invade Cuba or something. That's a big strand of theorizing. Wait, where were we? See, this is what I mean. This is what it's like when you're a rabbit hole. What was the question?
You explain the two pots of information that discredit.
Oh, anyway. What Jeff broke was, like, it turned out that the official CIA liaison to this committee was just neck deep in coordinating the secret anti-Castro activities that he's just like, when you look at what he was doing at the time of the assassination, you're just like picking someone who's going to want to continue the cover up. And the CIA has definitely worked hard to cover up what it was doing. The problem is that there's in principle a relatively innocent explanation of them covering up how closely they were monitoring Oswald and all that. The innocent explanation being that, boy, did they look stupid if they were covering monitoring them as closely, having failed to tip us off before Dallas. Right. And
isn't there an equivalent right wing explanation, which says Oswald spent a lot of time in the Cuban embassy in Mexico City, and during that period, they programmed him to kill the president?
Well, yeah. And the counter is, well, that's what they wanted it to look like, right? He went to the Mexican or what, maybe the Cuban embassy in Mexico or something. He tried to get into Cuba. This is shortly before the,
right.
But I will say there's two things. This is what I've learned, and I think this is undeniable. There are people who deny it, but that's because they haven't talked to me long enough. In both of these bodies of evidence, like evidence that there was more than one shooter on the one hand, and evidence that the CIA could well have been doing what the conspiracy theorists say or something like it. And I should say, like, more like rogue elements in the CIA, not like from the top down. But there is significantly more of both kinds of evidence than I thought, you know, back when I, like everybody else, laughed at anybody who mentioned the phrase grassy knoll. And it's like these crazy conspiracy theorists. We'll say that.
There's on the body of evidence that's the ballistic, you know, more than one shooter, grassy knoll part.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cure for that, for conspiracy theorizing about that.
What
is it? Just to visit the Texas School Book Depository.
It's all everybody, very close. It's all very. It's a small.
Everybody goes to the looks at the place where Oswald took the shots from. Says this. Dealey Plaza is tiny. I could make that shot. You don't need an explanation for how he could pull it off. It's not hard.
Mickey, I would direct your attention to frame 313 of the Zapruder film. The sad thing is, I'm not kidding. That's the frame.
What happened?
More than that, I can't believe this is, hey, can I say, people who are about to check out, can I just say that, like, if you want to encourage Mickey to come on the podcast and watch on YouTube, you should smash the like button. Or rate and review us favorably, or become a paid subscriber to the Non-Zero newsletter. I will not share any of the money with Mickey, but I will share with him the fact that we picked up a few paid subscribers. I'll tell him.
There's a early Robert De Niro, Brian De Palma film about Kennedy conspiracizing.
Is there? Really?
40 years ago, called Hi Mom.
Huh.
I remember him. He tries to seduce a woman by tracing the route of the bullet between the front of her shirt and the back of her shirt. And Robert De Niro is totally in it, and he becomes like a mass terrorist. So,
that's a cautionary tale for me. But quickly, I would just say, well, first of all, if you look at the Zapruder film and look at the direction Kennedy's head moves in, if it's doing that in direct reaction to the bullet definitely didn't come from the depository. Now, I do think there were shots fired from the depository. They've recovered bullet fragments and all that. And I think Oswald fired him. But now bullets don't always have a big impact on heads. I have to finish this off now that I've started it. However, if it was a soft-shelled or hollow-point bullet fired from the grassy knoll, that would account for this kind of head movement. Okay, so a regular Oswald was firing Full Metal Jacket bullets from the deposit. Okay, so the ones that hit Kennedy from the back of the head, if one did, or the one that hit him in the back, would not have necessarily moved him sharply. However, if the bullet from the grassy knoll was not that kind of bullet, it could well have had exactly the effect on Kennedy's head that we see.
This is getting gruesome and depressing, but nobody buys the Woody Harrelson's father theory. That always seemed to be the most promising.
What is that one?
Woody Harrelson's father was a convicted mob hitman.
Mm.
And there's a picture of the three amigos on the grassy knoll, and one of them looks exactly like Woody Harrelson. And everybody who looks into it says, no, that's the theory's bullshit. But
The assassin wouldn't be visible. I mean, the shot wasn't fired from the grassy knoll. There's a parking lot behind it that has a stockade fence that would be perfect. Okay, it's completely okay.
They detained these three guys, and one of them looks like Woody Harrelson's father.
Oh, they detained them? Really?
The police sort of stopped them, and at some point they stood still for a photograph in the area, and, you know, that was...
Well, there's a mob hitman named Charles Nicoletti who was... called to testify before the House subcommittee, and right before he's going to testify, he was killed, as it happens. And so there's speculation about him. There's a couple of those.
I should say that Woody Harrelson is now, I think, believe protesting that his father was innocent. So,
yeah,
maybe he's right.
You saved his lawsuit. Was convicted
of killing a judge. So
final thing is, there's a lot of credible testimony from people who were the closest to when it happened. And there weren't many people around. The crowd had thinned out by that time. I mean, by that part of the procession, who kind of all point to the same area where they heard at least one of the shots. And they were very close to Kennedy and very close to that spot. It wasn't the deposit.
That's sort of that's like the Las Vegas shooting. Everybody said that there was more than one gunman. And yeah. I'm not convinced that it wasn't just the sound ricocheting around, and you always think
could have been. Direction. See, you keep leading to things that you need me to say things I could only say if I'm deep in the rabbit hole. So the final thing I'll say is, guy on the overpass that Kennedy was about to come under, right. Very credible guy because he worked for the railroad, but he knew law enforcement because he had been deputized for 10 years. He had been a deputy who carried a gun. I don't think that was his full-time job, but he knew his shit. And he said right away, I heard four shots. Three sounded like a high-powered rifle coming from the area of the book depository. One sounded like a smaller caliber bullet. and it was over there, and he pointed the same, you know, place that's was also more or less signified, you know, pointed to by a couple of other witnesses. And he even went over right away and investigated and saw a place where there were all these footprints. It was muddy and cigarette butts. And so his testimony is the most interesting, but also the closest person to the thing, like 20 feet from Kent, like, I don't know, 30, 40 feet from the car, and another 50 feet from this place where the shots would have been fired from. He said confidently it was behind me and above me.
There's similar acoustic evidence in Las Vegas, apparently.
The echo thing occurred to me. There's not a lot. There is a structure. The fence itself is wooden. I think that you wouldn't get it from that. There is that other structure at the top of the grassy knoll. Can't believe I'm still talking about this. But it's not all that solid a structure. So I don't know where the echo happens.
The Las Vegas thing is that there are two different sounding guns seemingly fired simultaneously.
That's what people said, and that was, or was that's the guy what, actually using two
guns? Mostly that's where audio experts who are experts in listening to guns and figuring out what they are say.
Oh, wait, so there's an actual credible theory of multiple? No, not a credible theory of multiple shooters in Las Vegas, right?
Well, this isn't public. This is just talking from some guy who says, I hired, you know, two audio engineers, two expert former Green Beret audio engineers who, you know, listened to these guns, and they all said, yeah, they're completely different guns being fired at the same time. Anyway, what do I know? You should have Mike Isikoff on. He went down the rabbit hole. He came up. Probably doesn't want to go back down it again, but he knows a lot about it.
Well, I should. I mean, because, you know, he had Jeff Morley on his podcast, and he sounded pretty skeptical. This was months and months ago, back when he was doing this Yahoo podcast.
Yeah. Mike did. Yeah. Anyway, I trust him. I forget it. His theory all has to do with Postal Inspector Morse. I don't know if you've gotten into Postal Inspector Morse.
I haven't gotten into that part of the rabbit. I'm doing a pretty good job of staying out of it.
I'm Postal Inspector. Okay, so I want to rescue you from destroying the fan base of your podcast. And I want to read you a list, and you're going to tell me what these things have in common. Okay.
Okay.
College sports, college, girls sports, subways, journalism, driving, dating, going to the movies.
They're all endangered species.
They're all things that used to be occasions of joy and pleasure that have been completely ruined, that are no longer occasions of joy and pleasure. The girls' sports one is exaggerated because there aren't that, the penetration of formerly biological males who now identify as women in sports is probably not a great percentage yet. But nevertheless, it threatens to completely degrade the experience for women. College, nobody knows why people go to college anymore, and they don't even go to college. They go remotely, and it doesn't pay off and doesn't seem to be that much fun. Subways, they just opened a new rail line in L.A., and it's already been taken over by the homeless and their, you know, piles of urine in the corners, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody wants to take it.
Can I just add that I lived in New York in the 1980s, and it has not always been the case that subways were a place of joy and whatever else you said, okay?
But what has happened is they used to be a place where all classes took them anyway, even if they had to hold their nose.
And
now affluent people do not take the subway. It's all, if you go on the subway, it's all people who are in below the median and below.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a lot of affluent people even then. There were a lot of young people who would eventually be somewhat affluent, and a lot of kind of more, you know, artsy people and stuff. But I was riding the subway a lot right in the couple of years right before the pandemic. I mean, a fair amount I was getting in New York, and there was still a certain amount of socioeconomic diversity at that point. I think the pandemic was bad for them.
you go on the sixth line now, which goes up the east side of Manhattan, goes to the rich areas on the Upper East Side. It used to be there were guys well dressed in suits and wool coats going home the subway. Yeah. Those guys aren't there anymore.
Yeah. Well, Uber too.
Yeah. Cars, electric vehicles, or people are not convinced that electric vehicles are going to be nearly as much fun as gas powered cars. And what's more, they're going to monitor you. And if you make a false move, they'll probably send a bat signal to somebody who will, put a speed restrictor on your car. Dating, everybody hates being online. It was meeting people the old fashioned way was sort of much more fun and less degrading.
Speak for yourself. Not that I've tried it the online way, but I don't remember the other way being a barrel of laughs. Anyway.
I just think there are not that many compensating great things that are now available that give people pleasure, that compensates for taking away all these other things. That's my thesis. And that's another source of unhappiness with the future, which is not being dressed by the retro neocon neoliberalism of Nikki Haley.
We've come full circle. And also, we've managed to get to the point where we sound like old guys. So I just feel that this has been perfection itself, this conversation. Exactly what people expect of us.
I'm talking about dating. Do I sound like an old guy?
No, that's true. That's a young person's game, boy. Anything to report on that front? You know what they say about Iowa women, Mickey?
They're nice.
Is that it? I was going to ask you. I don't know what they say, but you're there. I was just going to ask. What do they
Everybody
say?
Everybody in Iowa is nice, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Have you had a corn dog?
No.
No, corn dog is not some cryptic reference to some exotic sexual act. Don't look at me like that. A corn dog, as Freud said, sometimes a corn dog is just a corn dog.
No, it's quite cold here on a caucus night. It's going to be -15.
Ooh,
I don't know if that's with the. I don't know if that's with the windshield or without. I think it's without the windshield.
Ooh, God, that's pretty fucking cold.
It's going to be incredibly cold, and the question is, who does that help? Everybody claims that it's going to help themselves. DeSantis says my people are these tough conservative types, and Trump's are the MAGA types, and Nikki Haley probably is potentially more hurt by the cold than everybody else. But it comes down to turnout, Bob. That's what they always say.
And on that pearl of wisdom, folks. So is it Monday or Tuesday?
Monday evening.
And your prediction is? Your prediction? Just the order. You just have to get the order right. You don't have to get the numbers. Trump number one. Who's number two?
I think I want it to be Trump, DeSantis, Haley. Because I don't like Haley and I like DeSantis, and he'd be a good president. I had to bet in secret, and it's just talking between us, I would bet Trump, Haley, DeSantis. But close. But Haley would do well enough to survive. I hope she doesn't.
And I maybe you've already said this, but Trump, Haley, DeSantis means DeSantis is toast, whereas you think if it's Trump, DeSantis, Haley, DeSantis has some kind of non-trivial shot.
Yes, but I don't think DeSantis will necessarily drop out. That's the complicated factor that Haley would not want him to drop out. He would drop out to fuck over Haley.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's more ambitious than that, and his wife is certainly more ambitious than that. And I think he would. I think he'd want to stick around.
Yeah.
Chris Christie had a reason to drop out, which is he hates Trump. His whole campaign was predicated on stopping Trump. This was the best chance to stop Trump. DeSantis' premise is not we have to stop Trump. So it's not like helping Trump out by siphoning some votes away in New Hampshire is going to make him have sleepless nights. The alternative is, Anyway, you got the point. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah. You don't want to hear more about the grassy knoll? Is that my, that's my inference from the way you're you don't want to hear.
No, we can meet afterwards and you can, like, you know, tell me everything.
Let's meet in the metaverse. We can, then we can be on the grassy knoll in the metaverse. Everything is possible.
If you go to Japan, is there a cafe specifically dedicated to people who are obsessed with, have gone down the rabbit hole of the JFK conspiracy theories?
I'm not sure. I understand why you're asking that question.
You saw that on New Year's Eve, they interviewed John Mayer from a cat cafe.
I didn't.
It was, it's hilariously funny. He's John Mayer, the rock and roller's singer, is now being interviewed from a cafe with all these cats walking around. And he's going, it's a cat cafe. I don't know if I can make it more clear to you. It's a cafe with cats. Okay,
so it's actual cats.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. They're like walking around. So they have cafes. Tokyo's such a big city. They have cafes dedicated to themes. You know.
So they may have a grassy knoll like cafe that I could hang out in.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. That's my point.
I'll give it a shot. I'll do some Googling. Well, listen, as you know, whenever you want to be a campaign correspondent and check in, you know.
Well, thank you. I mean, this in-depth reporting that you've gotten today doesn't come cheap, you know. It's
No, check is in the mail.
It takes a lot of effort to go and talk to the two people you happen to be sitting next to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. The depth of your research is what always just blows me away.
The other thing about this event is there was one reporter for every voter.
Hmm.
So every voter talked to multiple reporters over the course of the afternoon explaining why they voted the way they were. I didn't feel like I was needed to investigate this issue more.
So the Grinnell professor was your voter, and like every reporter has one official voter.
I had two voters, Bob.
Who's three. The second one?
Maybe even four, counting the one who blew me off. I talked to, you know, I'm a gregarious guy, Bob. You know that.
Well, you are. You'll drive a long way to hang out with people, as you just demonstrated. Are you going to drive to other places? Are you going to drive to New Hampshire?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You got to check in then. When is New Hampshire?
I'll check in from New Hampshire, but New Hampshire is two
weeks? 1 week?
No, 8 days from Monday.
Oh, my God.
It's feeding Tuesday.
Well, maybe I'll spend... Yeah.
The other thing is driving in the winter is incredibly dangerous.
Another original observation. So yeah, ice is not... You don't get a lot of traction on ice, are you finding?
No, this was brought home to me. In obvious ways. Anyway, I won't go into detail. But so if I make it to New Hampshire, I'd be happy to do another one.
And if you don't, we'll have the Mickey Memorial episode. Either way, people should tune in. You might just decide not to go?
No, I mean, no, never mind. Let's not pursue this gruesome.
Yeah, it's getting kind of grim. We should have stuck with the Kennedy assassination. It's taken a dark turn. okay.
They're dead too. You'll laugh. Or you'll laugh. They're dead too.
That was a Parrot Room joke, and that's where that joke should stay. Yes.
Okay.
All right. So we'll see you next time.
Okay. See ya.